The reading is taken from Mark's Gospel, chapter 1, beginning at verse 29. Give you a moment to find it if you want to. Jesus heals many. As soon as they left the synagogue, they went with James and John to the home of Simon and Andrew. Simon's mother-in-law was in bed with a fever, and they immediately told Jesus about her. So he went to her, took her hand, and helped her up. The fever left her, and she began to wait on them. That evening, after sunset, the people brought to Jesus all the sick and demon-possessed. The whole town gathered at the door, and Jesus healed many who had various diseases. He also drove out many demons, but he would not let the demons speak because they knew who he was. Jesus prays in a solitary place. Very early in the morning, while it was still dark, Jesus got up, left the house, and went off to a solitary place where he prayed. Simon and his companions went to look for him. And when they found him, they exclaimed, "Everyone is looking for you." Jesus replied, "Let us go somewhere else, to the nearby villages, so I can preach there also. That is why I have come." So he travelled throughout Galilee, preaching in their synagogues and driving out demons. A man with leprosy. A man with leprosy came to him and begged him on his knees, "If you are willing, you can make me clean." Jesus was indignant. He reached out his hand and touched the man. "I am willing," he said. "Be clean." Immediately the leprosy left him and he was cleansed. Jesus sent him away at once with a strong warning. "See that you don't tell this to anyone, but go, show yourself to the priest and offer the sacrifices that Moses commanded for your cleansing as a testimony to them." Instead, he went out and began to talk freely, spreading the news. As a result, Jesus could no longer enter a town openly, but stayed outside in lonely places. Yet the people still came to him from everywhere. Thanks be to God for his word.
Well, this morning's passage from Mark's Gospel, open your Bibles, will you, with me, find it on your device. This passage gives us a fascinating window, really, into the pressures placed upon Jesus in his life and ministry. Because through this window, we observe the choices that Jesus made and how he managed in that overused word, perhaps invented by 20th century therapists, how he managed stress. Stress in its various forms is, of course, one of today's bad boys, especially in its often destructive impact on our mental health. We may well know more about the causes of stress than they did in Jesus' day, but its cures remain as elusive as ever. Of course, to some extent, stress is a cultural thing, isn't it? I mean, a friend of mine from Malawi once told me, "You British have all the watches, but we have all the time." stress-related disorders do, though, seem more common in the fast-paced post-industrial West than in the Caribbean or in Africa. In the UK, they say, if you ain't moving, you ain't living. Our culture behaves as if speed is the only metric that counts. It is a major contributor to the phenomenon known as hurry sickness. That's what this book, which has been highly recommended to me over the months by John Mark Comer, is all about. I was finally able to speed read it this week. It's been a busy week, which is rather ironic, given that the title of John Mark Comer's book is The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry, which I speed read this week. Here's one of John Mark Comer's practical tips on how to slow down. Turn your smartphone into a dumb phone. Good advice. He then explains what he means and says, take email off your phone. Ever thought about doing that? God, I couldn't live. Take email off your phone. Take all social media off your phone. Woo! Disable your web browser. Delete all notifications, including those for texts. Yeah. Ditch news apps, or at least news alerts. In the gospel according to Comer, it's not stress that is the bad boy, but the mobile phone. Yet this little thing is so clever, isn't it? Flashlight on. Not so clever. Siri, flashlight on. See, I'm excited about that because I only discovered that this morning. Genuinely, our printer needed more paper. The current printer is under my desk. It's dark under the desk. I didn't know how to open the printer top to get the paper in. So I Googled how to get the light to work on your iPhone 15, and now I know. Siri, torchlight off. See? Clever, isn't it? Clever little thing. That's culture for you. Stress is cultural, but it can also be a very individual, personal thing. Because even in our 100-mile-an-hour culture, there are some people, maybe you're one of them, maybe you know them, there are some people who are natural-born chillaxers. Do you know that word? It's probably not a word, I've invented it. If you're a chillaxer, you're really kind of like chilled. And so it doesn't matter the cultural pressures. There are some people in life who are natural-born chillaxers. I'm afraid that's not me. I tend to be hyper-everything. But even I am learning, I hope my wife thinks this, even I am learning to stop in the middle of my sentences and pause. And I'm really trying to join the longest queue at a bank. I'm trying to wait for the answers to my questions before asking another question. And I am trying to kick the leaves. But boy, oh boy, it's tough. They say, don't they, that a preacher should always preach his message to himself before he preaches it to anyone else. Not because he needs to find out if the message is any good or not, but because a preacher needs to avoid building a house that he doesn't live in himself. So, folks, this is the sort of message that is maybe more for me than for anyone else here this morning. So let me talk to myself, and you can nod off and wake up in about 30 minutes. What then are the priorities of the king? That's our theme this morning, the priorities of the king. And how do we make them ours? How do they become ours? Well, here's the first one that we need to download. Cultivating an inner life with God. Verse 35 of our passage is really the hook. Listen, very early in the morning, while it was still dark, Jesus got up, left the house, and went off to a solitary place where he prayed. There's the hook. I guess I could have called this the priority of prayer, but it's about more than that. It's about soul space. The interior world of your life and mine. What is known as the contemplative life. Being present and in the presence of God. Now, activists like me tend not to make great contemplatives. I mean, we tend to think that such people want too much me time, while the rest of us work our socks off. But that kind of perspective can be the result of an unhealthy emphasis upon doing rather than being. Where in such a world, too much of our identity is wrapped up in our outcomes, in the results, in our productivity. And so for the activist, me time is for wimps. Actually, for Jesus, the priority wasn't me time, but God time. For there, in this quiet place of solitude, Jesus' mission and identity is cultivated through his relationship as Son to Father. All that Jesus is, all that he does, comes from this unhurried time that he carves out. We need to grasp this. And we also need to grasp this. Jesus was busy. He was in great demand. But somehow, he didn't allow that to get in the way of his inner life with God. And that was his secret. That's why Jesus never missed a deadline, always kept his promises, was never late for a meeting. Do you know, sometimes I think that if I pray too much, I won't have enough time to get everything done in my day. But that is so spiritually short-sighted. Someone has said, when God's people pray, God works. And when they don't pray, they work. Cultivating then this deep awareness of God in the rhythms and patterns of his pressured life was Jesus' number one priority above everything else. He made that his primary priority. Corrie ten Boom once said, if the devil can't make you sin, he'll make you busy. Now, if you don't believe that Jesus lived with the temptations of a full diary and a packed schedule, then reflect on our verses from 29 through 30. Verse 29, as soon as they left, Mark writes with this speed, as soon as they left the synagogue, they went with James and John to the home of Simon and Andrew. Simon's mother-in-law was in bed with a fever, and they immediately told Jesus about her. As soon as they left the synagogue, they immediately told Jesus about this need. You're getting the picture, aren't you? Now, the day to this point for Jesus in the synagogue on the Sabbath has already been exhausting. There he is in the middle of his preaching and debating, and a demon-possessed man kicks off. We looked at that last week, didn't we? And Jesus has to deal with it. That is emotionally draining. And all of it in public, every word of Jesus monitored, every action judged by a demanding audience. And Mark has already written in verse 28, back in verse 28, news about Jesus spread quickly over the region of Galilee. In other words, Jesus lived under huge scrutiny. Never a moment that he could call his own. And yet, his life was a life with wide margins. Do you sometimes feel that your life has such narrow margins? Not Jesus. And that was the key to his healthy soul. Because such bandwidth gives us the capacity to cope with the inevitable demands and pressures that come at us. So there's Jesus. He walks straight from the synagogue, and before he has a chance to sit down, he's asked to help Simon Peter's mother-in-law, who has a fever. Another need. Another, if less dramatic, healing miracle. Verse 31, so he went to her, took her hand, and helped her up. The fever left her, and she began to wait on them. Instant cure, see that little detail of Mark's? Instant cure. For Jesus' power deals with secondary as well as primary causes of sickness. No, take 3 tablets a day and you'll be okay in a few days' time. The woman is up and on her feet straight away. But then verse 32. That evening, after sunset, the people brought to Jesus all the sick and demon-possessed. Listen, the whole town gathered at the door, and Jesus healed many who had various diseases. He also drove out many demons. So having helped Simon Peter's mother-in-law, he sits down for a breather, and it's kicking off outside. There's a great commotion. The desperate and the diseased have found someone in life who can help them. Who wouldn't therefore want a piece of this man? So, as the sun sets, because that's when the Sabbath, of course, officially ended, people were being carried to Jesus in their droves. The expectations upon him, you see, are growing, as are the intrusions on his time. So how does he manage all of that? Well, he knows. He needs to feed his soul. So a few hours later, we see him walking in the dark to meet with God in the place of prayer. Now, friends, it's not about the exact time when we create that space in our day. But it is about finding the time to do it. Because I tell you this, what you know already, you will find time in your life for what matters, won't you? We all do. So let's not make our busy life a lame excuse, for life reflects your choices. Just look at your diary and your bank statement. We find time for what is important to us. So where does the cultivation of an inner life with God figure in your priority list? Jesus here is doing something that we need to do. He is bringing his time under control. You see, he knew that he could not go on giving out every day without taking in. For Jesus lived by the compass, not the clock. Think about a clock and a compass and their differences. We measure, don't we? We measure time by a clock. We measure direction by a compass. So imagine that bit of technology on the wall at home or around your wrist or on your mobile device, that clever little thing. It ticks, the hands move, the dates change, telling you the hour, the day, the month. That's the clock. Now imagine a compass. Because a compass is really a kind of pocket-sized sat-nav without the bells and whistles. And a compass gives us a sense of
where we are and where we're heading. So the clock represents our commitments, our appointments, our schedules, our activities, what we do with and how we manage our time. But the compass, on the other hand, represents our vision, our values, the conscious direction of travel. And the art of emotionally healthy living is to let the compass control the clock. Yeah? That's the art of emotionally healthy living. When we let the compass, our values, our vision, control the clock, the time, the demands. So that what we're doing day to day contributes to where we're heading, to our sense of life calling and our mission. And that's why, as the disciples wake up the following morning and crawl out of their sleeping bags, they're in for a shock. Because they have yet to grasp the mission of Jesus, the compass points by which he traveled. So read with me from verse 36. Very early in the morning, while it was still dark, Jesus got up and left the house and went off to a solitary place where he prayed. Here we come. Simon and his companions went to look for him. And when they found him, they exclaimed, "Everyone is looking for you." You can imagine the scene, can't you, and the panic back at Peter's house when they all wake up and discover that Jesus has gone. He's nowhere to be seen, and the whole town is outside the door waiting for the surgery to open. But there's no doctor in the house. And there's Peter, there's John, there's James. They can't meet all of those expectations that are queuing up outside. So Peter does the sensible thing. He wakes the others up, and they look for Jesus. Of course they do. You would. Actually, the word that Mark uses in the gospel there is the word that you might use when you track down an animal. Mark uses the word hunt. They hunt for Jesus. They track him down. You bet they do. They need him. And so do all these lonely, hurting people. Which is why when they eventually find Jesus, they say, with a degree of exasperation, I think, in the text, "What are you doing here? Your place is back there. Everyone is looking for you, Jesus. Everyone wants you." Now, listen to this shocking statement of Jesus and his priority. He reflects on that sea of human need and says, "What? No. Let's go somewhere else, to the nearby villages, so I can preach there also. That is why I have come." So here we have our second priority of the king, that very, very clear statement. "That's why I've come, to preach the good news of the kingdom." So for us, what's the second priority to get hold of? Investing in a calling from God. That was Jesus' primary calling, to proclaim the good news of the kingdom. That was his mission. That's where all the compass points were directing him. Now, we saw this last week a bit, didn't we? Jesus, who is first and foremost a proclaimer of the kingdom, not a healer. Now, your mission, my mission, they won't be exactly the same as Jesus, but it is equally important that we also live with a sense of God's calling upon our lives, so that our compass controls our clock. Everyone wants you, Jesus. Now, I'm moving on to the towns and villages all around. That's my mission in life, to preach the good news of the kingdom. So you have this shocking reality that Jesus refuses to go back to heal the crowds. Instead, he looks at his compass and isn't afraid to say no. Now, saying no is something that we can find very difficult, because we like to be needed. Some of us, obsessively so. Most of us would be flattered if someone rushed up to us and said, "Everyone wants you." But Jesus clearly understood his mission in life. He's not going to be driven by other people's agendas for him. He's focused on his calling. Therefore, Jesus knew when to say no and what to say no to. Perhaps that's our problem. And if it is a problem that we don't ever know how to say no, then if we're not careful, we can become slaves to other people's expectations of us and their demands of us. So there's Jesus. He leaves the clinic in order to preach the message of the kingdom through the rest of Galilee. You see what this tells us? That the person with a sense of his or her mission tends to see further than anyone else. But that kind of broad vision is the product of a very narrow focus. They say that if there are 15 good things to do today, and you can only do 10 of them, then you'll have to say no 5 times. When Steve Jobs, that hero of Apple, when Steve Jobs took over Apple Computer for the second time in 1998, he began to argue that the company needed a plan to rediscover its main emphasis. And he said this to his leadership team: focus does not mean saying yes. It means saying no. So folks, maybe what we all need to some extent in our crazy busy lives is not just a to-do list, but a to-don't list. That's what Jesus is saying here. Less is more. But that determination not to be sidetracked sets up the drama of the final episode in our passage this morning, and with it, a third priority: responding with a heart of compassion, from verse 40. I guess if the first priority for Jesus was prayer, and the second was proclamation, if we keep the P's going, the third is people. But it's more than that. It's making room for people in a busy, action-packed life. So there's Jesus in verse 45, literally on a mission, marching towards the next village in Galilee. And then this leper, this social outcast, interrupts his progress. And he obviously is someone who, because of his condition, will never hear about God's kingdom in the synagogue formally or temple, because he was ritually unclean. He was an untouchable. And here's Jesus. And here's the leper. And here's the drama. So as the man falls at Jesus' feet, it is a moment of high tension. What is going to happen next? What's Jesus going to do? He's just refused to go back to open the clinic. What about this man? Does does Jesus' mission priority leave room for an individual like this? Does he have time for people? That's what the leper wondered as he fell on his knees in the passage. A man with leprosy came to Jesus and begged him on his knees, "If you're willing, you can make me clean." You see, the issue is no doubt on his part about Jesus' power and authority to heal him. His doubt was about Jesus' willingness to heal him. After all, he may have heard the news that Jesus had closed up the surgery and left a whole town full of people. So is there room in Jesus' schedule for someone like him? Well, clearly as what transpires, he needn't have worried. Initially, as the translation suggests that we've got in our Bibles that Sue read, as the translation suggests, Jesus was, listen, indignant. You could almost translate that word as angry. Jesus was angry. Why? Why was he angry? Was he upset that this man was preventing him from getting on with his mission? Was this one intrusion too many? No. Jesus is angered by what sickness does to people. Jesus always reacts with a sense of revulsion inwardly to the evil in the world. He is moved by this man's situation, which is what the alternative translation might be. You might see it as a footnote in your Bible. Jesus was filled with compassion. He's moved by this man and the suffering his situation represents, the loss of dignity, the isolation from society, the destruction of the man's personality that this sickness was causing. It angered Jesus, and it moved him. And if you've spent any time with such vulnerable people who are, I don't know, suffering from chronic illness or significant mental confusion or extreme loneliness, or for whom life is just right now too much, then you will know what's at stake here. If you know people like this, then you will know what's going on here. You might even feel an untouchable yourself this morning. Cut off, isolated, confused, deeply lonely. Well, I want to tell you this. Jesus always has time for you. And he wants to make you his priority this morning. So Jesus does for this man what no one else dared to do. He touched him. Yeah? In the first century, leprosy carried the sort of fear and suspicion and prejudice and religious and cultural taboo that HIV/AIDS did when it first stalked the late 20th century. But Jesus breaks through all of that. And once more, if you look at the text, his healing touch is instantaneous. Yeah, Jesus could have healed a man with a word and from a great distance. But he touches the untouchable. He chooses the way of love. For love always finds a way. It doesn't calculate the odds. It acts, whatever the consequences. Because for Jesus, meeting human need always takes precedence over the rituals of religion. That's why four times in that brief little paragraph from verse 40, Mark uses the word not heal, but clean. Because this man didn't just need to be healed, but cleansed. If he was going to be allowed back into normal Jewish society, he had to show that he was not just healed, but cleansed. And that's why Jesus tells him to go to the priest. Because it's the priest who can authorize this man's status in the community and allow him back. So I guess here is the thing we need to grasp. Love is more than emotion and feeling. It's action. It's all well and good sympathizing with someone's pain. But am I going to do something about it? Will I get involved? Sometimes you may appreciate this, that sometimes when you preach a sermon, God gives you an opportunity to apply it before you preach it. I wish God didn't, though, sometimes, because it's often very costly. So on my walk into work last Wednesday, I was approached by this guy in a hoodie who was wielding a lighter or maybe one of those vape things. I saw him coming, and my instinct was to pretend that I hadn't seen him coming. Because I knew what was coming. I knew what was going to happen next. And sure enough, he asked me for money for a train fare. I just need £3, mate. You don't always know what to do for the best, do you? You don't. Genuinely, you don't. Is this a genuine need or a scam? See, the thing is, I had some previous on this. I'd been scammed last year while walking through Westbourne Arcade. A very well-dressed, well-spoken man, jangling a set of car keys, tapped me on the shoulder politely and said he'd run out of petrol and needed to get home quickly to see his daughter, who was very ill. I believed him. I gave him £5. But the very next day, I saw him using the same tactic. Only this time, he was walking on the path by the beach. So he and I had an interesting conversation. But last Wednesday, I didn't want to be taken for a ride again. You get that, don't you? And yet I sensed God just nudged me. Spirit of God just say to me, hey, what about the end of that passage that you're preaching on this Sunday? The leper and the love which doesn't calculate the odds. So I said to the guy, I said, hey, mate, it's not train fare you're after, is it, from me? It's money to spend on stuff that's going to do you no good. So look, come with me, and I'll buy you a steak bake in Greg's. I love this response of his. I don't like steak bakes, mate. But I love a slice of pizza. That's what we did. Me and the guy in the hoodie with his fuel lighter, he had a pizza, and I had a steak bake. Making room for people. Responding with a heart of compassion. But it's not about being naive. Nor does it mean that we have to rush around madly trying to help everyone. But it does mean this, that when we can, in Jesus' name, we make a difference to those who cross our path. We make room for the untouchables. The ending of this incident in the gospel is both ironic and funny. Here's the funny bit. Jesus tells the man to tell no one. What's the man do? He tells everyone. Why the warning to be quiet? It puzzles me. I think it's because Jesus does not want miracle chasers derailing his mission, distracting him from his priorities. But just as he feared, his celebrity status and the publicity follows him. So we read in almost the last words, as a result, Jesus could no longer enter a town openly, but stayed outside in lonely places, yet the people still came to him from everywhere. And there's the irony. The leper, who has for so long been an outsider in society, is now allowed back into the community. Jesus, on the other hand, has to stay outside in lonely places. So, folks, what do we take away from this morning, eh? Is the lesson, don't walk through the town center of Bournemouth unless you're prepared to buy a slice of pizza for a stranger in a hoodie? I don't think that's the key message. I think it's this. Have we got our priorities sorted out? That's the key message. Do we know what really matters in life so that we can navigate it in a healthy way? Those inevitable pressures that will come at us. Friends, life will keep coming at you. Busy, demanding, stressful. So please don't wait until life gets easier or quieter or less busy or less full on. It won't. Life doesn't work like that. We will simply exchange one set of pressures and stresses for another. So here's the advice from Jesus. We need to work out now how to operate in such a world. And the way we do that is by learning to be a disciple of Jesus. For at its heart, Christian discipleship is the response to Jesus' invitation. We saw it last Sunday morning. Come, follow me. That's the great adventure of faith, getting to know Jesus. And as I said last week, Jesus hasn't come to give us more time to kill, but more life to lead, abundant, get up and go life. But I don't want to be misheard. That is not an invitation from Jesus to a life of more speed, but to a life of more purpose. Living by the compass, not the clock. Here's why. Because Jesus, the one who said, come, follow me, also said, come to me, all who are weary and heavy laden and stressed out, and you will find rest for your soul. You see, it is rest in him to which Jesus calls us in all the busyness and the demands of our lives. To follow Jesus means to find rest to your soul. Well, as the group come up to the platform, let's just pause and pray together. Let God's word soak into the pores of your life, into those pressure points, into those stressors, into that busy week that you know you've got coming at you. It's only Sunday, but Monday's coming. And you know what's ahead. And listen to the words of Jesus. And my burden is light. Come, find rest for your soul. Lord, I let go today of the illusion that I can control every aspect of my life. My life is affected by the choices of others, by my own brokenness, and the brokenness of a world waiting to be redeemed. So I yield myself this morning to your presence, your purpose, your pleasure, and your path. Oh Lord, you know me more deeply and fully than I know myself. You love me with a greater love than I can love myself. You even offer me more than I can desire. So take my tired body my confused mind and my restless soul into your arms. And give me rest. Simple, quiet rest. Amen.